Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod.
In cybersecurity, speed is survival. SOC Radar is your early warning system, monitoring external threats to your company to spot risks before breaches. SOC Radar delivers proactive threat intelligence with actionable insights for holistic exposure management across attack surfaces, dark web, and brand protection. With automated detection, triage, and investigation, SOC Radar is your business's frontline defense. Start your free trial at socradar.io/podcast. That's socradar.io/podcast. Don't wait.
A holiday horror.
I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
Little Falls, Minnesota is a quiet place of less than 10,000 residents at the mouth of the Mississippi River. The city's biggest claim to fame is being the boyhood home of aviator Charles Lindbergh, but beyond that, Little Falls is a poster child for Midwest Americana, community antique shows, forested parks, and county fairs. But like many of the idyllic cities that boast wholesomeness and hometown heroes, all in Little Falls is not what it seems. In fact, one of the most notorious Thanksgiving crimes took place in Little Falls. This crime was a window into one resident's paranoid and violent psyche, and all terrifyingly caught on tape. Today on Ghost Town, the Thanksgiving Day Murders. On the night of November 22, 2012, two teenagers, 18-year-old Haley Kiefer and her cousin, 17-year-old Nicholas Brady, cased a home in Little Falls, Minnesota. Brady and Kiefer were petty criminals, to be sure. Brady had stolen drugs before, and the two had burglarized other houses in the area. But they were young, nonviolent, and unarmed. This night would, in their minds, be no different than their past crimes. With the culture of their city being fairly relaxed and low crime in general, the two teens thought they'd break in and be in and out fairly quickly. First, Kiefer and Brady cased the house at 14319 Elm Street, finding an upstairs window to enter. Kiefer then waited outside the window while Brady broke in and climbed into the house, descending from that second floor into the basement. For approximately 10 long minutes, Kiefer waited for her cousin's call to her outside the house. But after not hearing anything, she then herself climbed into the broken window to find him. But this house at 14319 Elm Street was not just another mark. The house belonged to 65-year-old Byron David Smith, and Smith was obsessive, to say the least. Born June 11, 1948, Byron David Smith had made his home in Little Falls after retiring from the U.S. State Department as a security engineering officer. Smith lived alone. He was never married, had no kids, and in his retirement focused not on a quiet rural existence, but a huge problem in his own life, in his own mind. Burglaries. Whether these were wholly a product of his paranoia or real instances, or somewhere in between, well, you can ultimately be the judge. In November of 2012, Smith was on high alert. He told many that he had been burglarized at least 6 times, reporting 1 time to the police. When officers investigated Smith's claim, they found $4,000 in cash, a watch, coins from a coin collection, and a chainsaw stolen from Smith's premises. While police found evidence for perhaps one other burglary, Smith began descending into a world of obsession around the safety of himself and his home, installing a multi-camera security system for protection, patrolling his home with a holster and a loaded gun, and stashing bottles of water and granola bars in his home's basement, just in case he had to hide out there for a prolonged period of time. Smith believed an unknown neighbor was to blame for the break-ins, so he'd often move his truck so it looked like he was away from home, then hide in his house with a tape recorder for evidence, and of course, a firearm for protection. So, on that night of November 22nd, Smith was ready. He went to his own basement, turned on his recording device, and then removed the light bulbs from the ceiling lights and positioned himself in a chair with a Mini 14 and a 22 caliber revolver. You can picture it, Smith sitting in his chair with his two guns, completely obscured from view and completely in the dark. From this terrifying point forward, everything Smith has is recorded in haunting detail. In fact, you can find the full recording online easily if you can stomach it. We'll play a short selection of the tape, but also communicate what was on it so you don't have to listen to all of it, or any of it if you don't want to. From the basement, Smith hears the window upstairs break and Brady climb in. Smith then waits in silence for 12 minutes. At that point, you hear Brady go down the steps into the basement. You can then hear two gunshots. That's Smith shooting Brady twice on the stairs, and then one more gunshot after he falls to the bottom of the stairs. That's Brady shooting Smith in the head. Smith then drags Brady's body into his basement workshop, making taunting remarks about the body, and then sits back down in his chair. After a few minutes, Kiefer comes down the basement stairs, calling her cousin's name. In the complaint, Smith says that he shot Kiefer, quote, as soon as her hips appeared on the stairwell. Smith can be heard on the recording sarcastically saying, oh, sorry about that, followed by Kiefer saying, oh my God, very quickly. Smith then shoots her in a succession of gunshots, all the while Kiefer screams, I'm sorry. Smith yells back, you're dying. After another shot, Kiefer is still alive but grasping for air. At that point, Smith fires a shot under the teenager's chin, quote, up the cranium, he says in the complaint, finally killing her. Smith repeatedly calls Kiefer derogatory names and then drags her body into the workshop, putting it on top of her cousin's body. An autopsy report would later show that Brady had been shot 3 times and Kiefer had been shot 6 times. But then the recording continues, giving the listener even more insight into Smith's sick and paranoid mind. We'll talk about it after this break.
In cybersecurity, speed is survival. SOC Radar is your early warning system, monitoring external threats to your company to spot risks before breaches. SOC Radar delivers proactive threat intelligence with actionable insights for holistic exposure management across attack surfaces, dark web, and brand protection. With automated detection, triage, and investigation, SOC Radar is your business's frontline defense. Start your free trial at socradar.io/podcast. That's socradar.io/podcast. Don't wait.
Teenagers Haley Kiefer and Nicholas Brady were tragically killed at the hands of retired security officer Byron David Smith, their final moments alive being taunted by Smith in a dark basement, all recorded on tape. But after Brady and Kiefer are killed, Smith continues to record, not having anything to do with his own protection, but his viewpoints and state of mind. Smith starts talking to himself, almost practicing an imaginary phone call, verbally disparaging the victims and describing how a future court case might unfold to his advantage, why he was justified in doing what he did. It is chilling. Smith rambles for almost a half an hour, saying things that justify, in his own mind, these gruesome acts, including, quote, it's all fun, cool, exciting, and highly profitable until somebody kills you. And, quote, I don't even see them as human. I see them as vermin. And, quote, even I try to be a good person, to do as I should, to be friendly to people, to help them when I can. They think I'm a sucker, to be there to take advantage of. Is that the reward for being a good person? Again, you can listen to the tape in its entirety if you elect to do so, and you can even see some of the surveillance online. But just to get a sense of the bizarre and disturbing language caught on tape, here is a very short recording.
I felt like I was cleaning up a mess. Not like spilled food. Not like vomit. Not even like diarrhea. The worst mess possible. and some tiny amount of respect. I was doing my civic duty. Just the law enforcement system wouldn't handle it, and I had to do it. I had to do it. They weren't human. I don't see them as human.
In short, Smith rambles at length about being in the right and Kiefer and Brady being in the wrong, inhuman, vile, and evil, and therefore worthy of execution. Smith waited 24 hours to call the police, claiming he didn't want to bother them on a holiday. When Morrison County Sheriff's Office was informed of the killings, they immediately went to Smith's house and did background checks on everybody involved. On a search of Brady's car, which was parked outside the house, evidence was found that linked Brady to the burglary of a retired teacher the night before. Sheriff Michael Wetzel had acknowledged that Brady and Kiefer were there to burgle Smith's residence and found that Brady was under investigation for drug theft. And yet, most notably, Smith's chilling narrative was blatantly contradictory to his own recording, which was submitted into evidence and became, of course, the biggest piece of evidence in the case. Smith first told police that he was visiting neighbors when he saw Kiefer drive past his house. He told authorities that he suspected she was responsible for all the other burglaries of his home. He commented that he immediately went back to his home to, quote, get ready for her. In painstaking detail, Smith described his process of surveillance and how he systematically shot both teenagers, one by one. In his statement, Smith said that Kiefer had let out a short laugh after she fell down the stairs, saying, quote, if you're trying to shoot somebody and they laugh at you, you go again. Smith's own audio tape, however, proved that this was absolutely not the case. Instead of laughing, she can be heard crying out, oh my God, in fear. In police interviews, Smith acknowledged that he, quote, fired more shots than he needed to, and that he fired, quote, a good clean finishing shot into Kiefer's head. Clearly, according to the recording, the incident was not of a man defending himself from the mockery and threat of two dangerous and violent criminals, but of an unwell and paranoid person taking out his fear, anxiety, misogyny, and anger on two petty teenage thieves. When news of the case hit the press, Smith's actions brought up huge controversies around stand your ground laws, which, if you've watched The Perfect Neighbor on Netflix recently, is discussed really expertly at length. This law gives a homeowner varying abilities to defend their residence from intruders. Minnesota's Stand Your Ground law says, quote, reasonable force may be used upon or toward the person of another without the other's consent when the following circumstances exist or the actor reasonably believes them to exist. It also says, quote, the intentional taking of the life of another is not authorized, except when necessary in resisting or preventing an offense which the actor reasonably believes exposes the actor or another to great bodily harm or death, or preventing the commission of a felony in the actor's place of abode. Basically, people believed Smith perhaps had a right to shoot the teenagers initially for breaking into the house, or perhaps for killing them. But others believed that beyond the initial shots, or the initial shots in and of themselves, were excessive and cruel, unauthorized, as the law says. Then there's the question of if Smith premeditated, if he thought perhaps that he was going to have to injure or kill someone in the paranoia around his home being burglarized. All of these questions went to the media, and on April 21st, 2014, they were taken into Smith's trial. The trial commenced on April 24th, and on April 29th, Smith was found guilty on two counts of first-degree murder with premeditation and on two counts of second-degree murder and immediately sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Wes Hattelstead, one of the 12 jurors, would later say to press that, quote, jurors went through each charge point by point and, quote, reasonably quickly came to the conclusion that we thought it was in fact premeditated. He also said that jurors talked about the, quote, deer stand that Smith set up to wait for the teens, and he also compared the setup to a, quote, shooting gallery, a carnival game where a shooter waits for an object to march into view. As you might imagine, the audio recording was ultimately the biggest influence on the jury's decision. The tape, Smith's own creation, would seal his fate. Again, according to Hattelstead, quote, "The tape was the most damning piece of evidence in my mind. The audio recording of the actual killings and the audio recording of Mr. Smith's interview immediately after his arrest pretty much convinced me that we were dealing with a deranged individual." Following his conviction and sentence of life imprisonment, Smith went through multiple appeals. All were denied. Smith will spend the last of his days incarcerated in a fortified fortress of a different kind, at Oak Park Heights, a high-security prison in southeastern Minnesota.
In cybersecurity, speed isn't just an advantage, it's survival. SOC Radar is your early warning system against hackers. SOC Radar continuously monitors the external threat landscape, so cyber threats hit your radar before they hit your business. But it doesn't stop there. SOC Radar empowers your company with proactive exposure management, actionable insights that help you stay ahead of cyber criminals and minimize business impact. And with SOC Radar's holistic exposure management, you get complete visibility, attack surface monitoring, dark web monitoring, threat intelligence, and brand protection are all unified in one powerful platform. SOC Radar isn't just another tool. It's your frontline defense in a world where threats never sleep. Start your free trial at socradar.io/podcast. That's socradar.io/podcast. Don't wait.